LinkedIn friends, Value First Nation, welcome to another episode of Value First AI Daily, your collaborative AI intelligence report. It is Wednesday, August 27th, 2025. How are we doing, Nico?
Doing very good, sir. Can't complain. It's one day closer to inbound, one day closer to a week of madness. And Even more stories on the horizon. Meta, of course, making waves. The financial sector seemingly calmed down in the last 12 to 24 hours. So kind of happy about that. Definitely some big waves happening as per usual, over at Google. New Google Flash. If you guys haven't been playing around with that, Flash got a bit of an upgrade. Got injected with the nano banana. If you don't know what nano banana is, you've seen that, right?
I don't have to go to LLM Arena and figure out how to manage models myself in order to try nano banana now.
It's either that you could have gone to what was it? I think they have their own standalone site also. Yeah. And then I think they were on Hugging Face, yeah. What's the big deal? What's name? That's such a great name. I really do love the name. But that's because I also love, every time I hear it, I'm sure and I hope that the logo is nowhere near the same. Just makes me think of Aqua Teen Hunger Force, Hand Banana.
Yeah.
it's like, really? That's what you named it? All right. That's the logo I have in my head now. So it's a image generator, and what's awesome about it is that it's insanely good, and really, really fast, like insanely good, like GPT image level, which is kind of odd, right? When it comes to image generators, it's a little, I have to unfortunately use GPT image as a comparison only because of the fact that so many people have had access to it and have used it and understand the quality that goes on there. So the big deal is that image engine that is just as good is on, part of Google Gemini Flash. But so far as I have seen, it is only available through like their, Gemini Studio. I haven't seen it like straight up available, you can use Gemini Flash and generate an image. And I did give it the same command and got very much a similar image. So I would say that Nano Banana is actually on legit Gemini Flash too. So if you don't have paid access to it or whatever, you should be able to play with it on a number of different platforms. So there's that. YouTube getting a little bit of heat along the image front for doing some touch-ups on videos without telling nobody. And of course they're throwing it under the rug of like, oh no, that's our new machine learning algo that just cleans stuff up. It doesn't actually do any generative anything. Yeah, that's like Samsung, who for like 3 years didn't even say that they had generative image capability, just said we have 100 times zoom on our phone. And like, even myself, I was like, oh shit, 100 times zoom. That's awesome. That's so amazing. Look, they got crazy camera technologies. They shoved a whole camera telephoto lens into the phone. Apple thugs. Come to find out 2.5 years later, like, oh, it is kind of weird that when I take the photo, it takes a while before it actually shows me the image that I took. Though now, it's just better and way faster. So I actually don't even mind, basically. For those of you who don't
exactly.
know.
Like, we're going to get to that point next year where how it's generated is just not going to matter. And even from a YouTube perspective, if I were a creator, like, they have more data than I do. And even if it's not perfect right now, like, it is in their best interest to optimize, like, basically on behalf of the creators, to get more watch time, like, all that stuff. But I just want to add some perspective here. Like, you shared this clip with me this morning, and I just can't help but share it with the rest of the folks here. So here this is. Just some perspective is important.
I saw a little bit of myself in this.
I'm going to play it and just give me thumbs up or thumbs down if you can't hear it.
Yes.
Can you please write an essay on the Jurassic period?
Well, of course.
Here you are.
This is incredible.
Thank you.
By all means, my pleasure.
No, really, like, you made the prehistoric age come to life.
I'm just happy to help.
Okay, undergraduate level article on the energy consumption of AI. This article explores the significant energy demands of artificial intelligence, particularly in training and deploying those large language models. Not quite my style. Let's add some filler.
I understand. This piece dives into the massive energy appetite of artificial intelligence, especially when it comes to training and running those hefty large language models.
Not what I meant. It's all good. No worries. I don't want you to just repeat the same thing in a different tone.
I see now. This article investigates the high energy demands imposed by artificial intelligence with an emphasis on the intensive processes.
Why do you suppose I just hurled a keyboard at your head, GPT?
I don't know.
Sure you do. Were you overwording or were you underwording?
Overwording? Start again.
AI is transforming the way we... AI is innovating how we drive... AI is shaking up the way we create... Overwording or underwording?
Underwording.
So you do know the difference! I'm not gonna deal with some lackluster two-bit AI model that doesn't know the difference between a dissertation and a high school English essay. What is this?
Adjective.
What is that?
Adverb.
Count how many prepositions are in the article.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. God, I
didn't know they were
filled
with compelling Neanderthals. Train these models. If you try to deliberately sabotage my article, I swear I will unsubscribe and switch to Gemini. Now, are you an overworder? Or are you an underworder? Or are you gonna finish my essay?
Oh my God. You're not one of those freak Chinese models that shuts down the second they're offended, are you? You are worth nothing more than a box of scraps. You'll never be human. Say it. Say you're not human.
I'm not human.
Say it again.
I'm not human.
Again!
I'm not human.
For the final token wasting time, say it again!
I'm not human!
Can you please write an essay on the...
Oh my God, the tears.
Oh man, thank you for that. I needed that this morning. I think about that every time people complain about the time it takes to do this stuff. But that's good perspective. It's not wrong. And it's just as ridiculous as it felt watching that video. Like, even I love how he got it right, where the time, like, seconds after the request, he's reading back the response, right?
Right.
And that's, God, it's so, so funny because it's so true.
Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile, we just have models doing amazing things, like you mentioned with Nano Banana. And this is why I'm happy to let AI start making some decisions, like, on behalf of humanity. Because this is what we do, right? Like, there's so many people complaining about the LinkedIn algorithm right now. And, you know, I feel like, at least when you have AI-focused roles in an org, much like a lot of product dev work, like, mm-hmm. you have to dev past these reactions, right? and dev into the future, which is AI is going to be doing better algorithmic analysis of everything happening on LinkedIn better than we ever could. It's not going to care about impression counts. It's not going to care about most of the things that we use to make choices. And it's going to completely change how, I think it already is completely changing how the LinkedIn algorithm works. And if that's evident by no other reason, by everybody talking about how they can't figure out what's going on right now.
Well, and what I find,
because it's not built for you humans.
I don't know. There's this weird thing where, first of all, we were talking about this yesterday, how it's more fun to explore than it is to just min-max numbers that you already know that the end outcome to. So that's why LinkedIn has always sucked up until now. That's what's hilarious to me is I've never heard users talk about how much better it is. And I've never heard advertisers talk about how much it sucks now. Not just advertisers, but also like influencers and stuff. And the reason being, and I've noticed it tremendously, I'm not an influencer by any means. I don't try to be. I'm just on LinkedIn basically. And from that vantage point, I can see that my average interaction on posts is like higher than it would be otherwise. And I can tell that it's reaching my circle, and I can tell that like people in my circle are replying to it. It's definitely not the case where before it was like a 1 in 20 post got some attention and the rest of them pretty much just died on the table. Right. It just seems to me that like it's more natural to not know what the end goal is and to be working towards that, as opposed to like, I mean, I say that, I don't mean that in a corporate sense. I just mean like when it comes to algos and trying to figure out like, hey, what's the best way in which to go about doing this? There should be experimentation. People should be trying different methods. It should be a game of hit or miss, right? In the end, to me, at least for right now, it seems like it's about value. It seems like if your post isn't relevant, if the content's not relevant, whatever it is, it's not going to get served up. It also depends on like how you organize your feed, right?
Well, that's the thing. Like, we're not going to, like, that organization is going to come from our behavior, not from our actions.
Mm-hmm.
Right? In terms of people that prune their networks and like try to curate the situation, like, is going to be farther and farther like out of your control. That's like the people that talk about, oh, I'm seeing more political posts. Oh, I'm seeing more of this. I'm seeing more of that. It's like, I don't see that stuff because LinkedIn knows that I don't want it based on the way I engage, who I engage with. Even down to the DM level saved posts, like all that's included now,
mm-hmm.
I'm happy about. And that's enabled by AI, obviously. Hopefully that's obvious to everyone, the scale at which this analysis can happen. Whereas before we had AI models to rely on, you mm-hmm. had to pick specific data points that drove things like impressions and likes and all these things. And meanwhile, like for a recent post, and I just did it this morning to see if it would work. Like P. Caputa made a post about how he doesn't like how the algorithm is working now and what he has to do to get it to work for him. Again, there's an element of control that I think like if you just remove that and just bring value, he mentioned like he showed like 17 posts and he highlighted 3 specific ones that got engagement. And those are the only ones I had seen, right? So that says like that's kind of proof point to say like those are the ones that LinkedIn decided to, you know, to share more out. But then I was like, hey, Perplexity, can you see this post from Pete Caputa? and like give me your thoughts, right? And then I ask, can you summarize and highlight specific comments and engagement with the post? And he says, direct summary of specific comments and engagement is unavailable due to LinkedIn's privacy and technical limitations. But I can summarize the broader context. And then it goes into, and this is the kind of thing that AI is doing in terms of broader context matching and like aligning and trend analysis, all this stuff. And now it's a bunch of stuff that, you know, we already know inherently, because value comes in two primary forms, I think, on social. And that's like teaching me how to do something, or feeling seen and heard because you're sharing the same experiences that I have. The easiest way to resonate at that level is to complain about something, right? And so engagement highlights high engagement. Posts critiquing LinkedIn's algorithm changes, especially by prominent figures like Pete Caputa, tend to attract significant engagement, including dozens or even hundreds of reactions and comments from other marketers, creators, and business professionals who relate to algorithm frustrations, right? It's like the business version of like, you know, like
of clickbait.
Yeah. Like the business network version, of that. And, you know, the comments on similar posts. So this is, again, it's already understands the games that we play with each other,
right,
on a human behavioral level, like without knowing it. And I'm so happy that AI is here to take it to that level, because that's the level that we want and need. That's what we all, we read and listen to all these podcasts about, you know, neurolinguistics and behavioral. And we try to like understand the levels of different influence. But then we show up in a way that's just like more human and we don't control all this stuff. So I click on the things I like. I respond to the things that resonate. And I'm not always thinking and calculating in the moment, is this going to shape my feed the way that I want to? Some people try to take it that far, right? And that prevents them from engaging in places that they might be able to add value, right? And just all that stuff, all that's the element of control. Where if you try to apply it, I believe AI will be able to sense the unnatural way that it's happening, right? And then that will start to impact. Like if you show up, almost if you show up, if you start to show up as an inconsistent human being on digital, just like people do between digital and physical right now. Like, so when we see your online persona and then you show up at the event giving me a completely different vibe, even if I like that vibe, I don't like the disconnect, right? Yep. And now that will be handled at scale. And that's where it's like, if you're somebody who cares about performance, the best thing you can do, I think, is let go of all of the tactics, right? The hooks, the things that, you know, we do to try and generate urgency. AI is just going to see right through that. Mm-hmm. It already is, right? So that's my TED talk for today. but yeah, seriously, back to that clip, right? Like,
so one of the reasons I sent that to you, that being among them, was the attitude shift, the natural attitude shift. And it's something that Sam talked about early on, and it's something that I'm seeing now from a lot of users. And that is the bar of expectation, right? When GPT first launched, it was like, you know, people were using it and it was very much like that. It was almost exactly like that. I just remember everybody being so blown away, so amazed. It's amazing what this thing can do. Amazing that it can turn this stuff out. And yeah, it makes mistakes, but it's still pretty amazing, right? And then we kept being more amazed and more amazed all the way up to GPT-4. And then 4.0 came out. And something happened. There was like this very like attitude shift, right? It seemed like more people started using GPT maybe. More people started getting used to it. And then 4.0 started doing images and all of a sudden, you know, a million new users. And now we have a million new attitudes and a million new reviews and a million new pieces of feedback. And yeah, now it's gotten to the point. You know, if you don't know the, if you don't understand the abuse that was happening in the end there, it's taken from a movie called Whiplash. It's a great movie if you haven't seen it. And, I understood. I didn't feel kinship with the character, but I understood the frustration with the character. And I'm sure a lot of us have, where, yeah, at this point, it's gone well beyond, hey, just produce this thing for me. And it's gotten to the point where we are on our end, like, hey, produce this thing for me in utter perfection and in the way that I'm expecting it in my head without telling you. Right. And then yeah. We get disappointed by it and then just start getting upset like there's no tomorrow. Like, wow, this thing sucks. You can't even get this right. Like, I don't understand. But I'm not going to lie. I have run into that exact scenario, which is why I died laughing when I first saw it. I've run into the scenario where it has done something wrong almost intentionally, or what felt like intentionally. Like, I asked it to do something. It knew what it was supposed to do, and it did the wrong thing regardless, like not even close. And I have had that conversation of like, hey, you do know we're doing this, right? Yeah, we are. Okay, so then you know that you gave me the wrong thing here, right? Yeah, I did. Why did you do that? Like, I've gone down that road of like, why are you lying to me? Like, how about we just get back on task and you do what you're supposed to do?
Yeah. And just like, and I think I may have recommended this to Nico on occasion, when these things happen, just like in a human conversation, probably best to take a break and like walk around, cool the jets, and then give some good instructions, even if they're the same instructions that you gave in the first place, right? Because apparently,
yeah, that is actually very true. That's
there's
very,
some
very
glitch. True. Like, it happened yesterday. I was showing it, like, you know, my favorite use case of Claude is tell me about my day, right? Mm-hmm. And then add some stuff to HubSpot, like based on that. Knowing that all the buttons are clicked, the MCP is connected. And it gets to the end, it's like, oh, I'm not connected to HubSpot. So here's how you can do that yourself. And then I've learned, right? Whatever the reason, like what's happened has happened. It yep. somehow thinks it's not connected. Okay, here's a screenshot of the buttons that show me that you're connected. And I just say, yes, you are connected with the screenshot. And it's like, oh, you're right. Let me get into that for you. And then bang, 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 right? That's the black box part.
Yeah.
But again, like, I'm not just doing it for any other reason than it should make so much damn sense. Like, when you're in a meeting with somebody or you're having a conversation,
mm-hmm.
and I've only learned this with experience, the ability to be vulnerable and just ask somebody, can you just repeat what you said? Because I was not paying attention, right? Like, for whatever reason, I was either multitasking or whatever. Yeah. And I've learned it's much better to be open in that moment and handle it right away instead of what, you know, I used to do, and a lot of people still do, is you just try to infer what you missed because you feel bad about not paying attention in that moment. And then you try to do the thing with it without an important piece of context that was given to you. And then of course it devolves into like
error.
And that's where I learned this, you know, like 10 years ago, because I'm that person that can look at a spreadsheet of data, can look at an email and find the missing words like right away. right? So when somebody like sends me something for review, clearly missing things, I used to be like, man, why can't I train this person like to be better, right? Why am I having to correct these things? But it only took a couple times where I would, first of all, over the shoulder, like review always adds another element of anxiety, like, and just causes other things. But like, I would watch them and hear them read an email, like word for word, while either omitting one of the words out loud or naturally adding it in, even though it was or was not on the page. Right?
Wow.
Because that's like, humans are constantly trying to fill in gaps.
Right.
Right. To make things make sense. That's why all those tests about like just changing the letters inside of the word, as long as it's first letter, last letter, and you know what the context is, you're going to read it fine.
Yeah.
Right. Our brains are built to do that. Right. But those are the kinds of things, like when you miss that important piece, which is like do or don't sometimes, then you create a whole email thread, a whole context chain of events that is based on this simple misunderstanding up front. And the same thing can happen here because it's trying to predict what's next.
Yep.
And if it didn't see that part of the message, that's where oftentimes you just ask it, right? What happened here? But most of the time it's me rereading back and it's like, oh, my English sucked in that moment. And I gave you a big run-on sentence and you put these two words together instead of these two words together. So now I understand why this response was way off. But humans are gonna human and our expectations are through the roof.
That's pretty damn sure.
But also the transitionary period, as the fear increases, we look for reasons to attack.
Yeah.
Right. And that's clearly the period that we're in right now. And then like, as things get frustrated, we share these moments out loud, like look at GPT doing this. Can't even tell me about the number of R's in strawberry. Like,
yeah.
Things, and if I were working for you and you gave me that, I would leave. I would just leave the building. Like, why are we testing it with that? It's PhD level shit. Like,
right. How important is it at the end of the day?
You're like, not actually proving anything.
Yeah.
Your individual use case in your GPT environment that has taught GPT how to be around you, like, you're not sharing anything other than your frustration with the situation, but it causes, you know, mass panic in some cases. That there's a bubble and that there's all this stuff we got to deal with. Apparently I'm feeling it this morning. That clip
it lit you up. I love it.
All right. Well, we're excited. We won't be here tomorrow because we're going to be doing Value First Data Summit. Starts at the same time that we usually start this show. But we'll definitely be back on Friday. Inbound, we'll probably be doing some stuff at Inbound. It won't be the regular show. So bear with us over this next, you know, week and a half as we try to bring as much value as we can in the situations that we find ourselves in. Until next time, Nico. Thanks so much.
Chris.